Wakalofala yatu. You're listening to Dateline Pacific from RNZ Pacific. Ko Koroi Hawkins e Mahaku. Coming up,
it'll be quite a diverse caucus representing the diversity of Aotearoa New Zealand.
After a landslide victory, New Zealand's Labour Party will have its largest ever Pacific caucus. Also,
if they are going to use coal in PNG, that's the site where we do not want that to happen.
An environmental group hopes to stop Papua New Guinea's proposed coal projects, and
this risk of losing maritime jurisdiction because of sea level rise caused by climate change.
The Cook Islands government says a formal declaration of its sea borders protects them for future generations. New Zealand's Labour Party will see its largest ever Pacific caucus after claiming a landslide victory of 64 seats in Parliament. Last term's four existing Pacifica MPs, Carmel Sepuloni for Kelston, Jenny Saalesa for Panmure Otahuhu, Aupito Williamsio for Mangere and Porto Williams for Christchurch East, all comfortably won their electorates. Aupito says he was grateful to receive such strong support within his electorate and to see that support across the country. He says he is excited for the new Pacific Heritage MPs joining the caucus this term.
This result has given the largest Māori caucus in the Labour Party and the largest Pacific caucus. It'll be quite a diverse caucus representing the diversity of Aotearoa New Zealand. And I think in our own Pacific caucus, there's multiple levels of diversity in there.
Sarah Jane Hopgood has more on the new Pacifica faces entering Parliament.
Teresa Ngobi, of Samoan and Scottish descent, is the new Labour MP for Ōtaki, an electorate that has previously been a safe National Party seat. The new electorate of Takanini saw Samoan Dr. Nerulea Vassa win by 4,500 votes. New candidate Samoan lawyer Barbara Edmonds won the Mana seat. In Palmerston North, Labour's Tangi Utikere of Cook Island Heritage won by a massive majority. On the list, two Pasifika MPs could include returning Tongan Anahila Kanonata'a Soiswiki and Samoan Leomanga Lydia Sosene. This is Sarah Jane Hopgood.
And while it's all smiles for Labour, New Zealand's National Party faced massive losses in Saturday's election, managing to land only 35 seats. After National's setback, Samoan Agnes Loheni and Alfred Ngaro of Cook Islands Heritage are no longer in Parliament. Pacific academic Richard Pamatatau says the National Party missed the opportunity to include both MPs in their core leadership group. Mr. Pamatatau says the Pacifica voices were ignored in National's caucus.
How can it, as a party that says it represents a broad church and wants to be there for all New Zealanders, be that party when it doesn't have people of Pacific ethnicity or other diversity in there?
Richard Pamatatau says National now have to reflect on what went wrong.
A chance, though, to try and work out how the party can, over the next 3 years, restore itself. And that's going to take a lot of soul-searching and a lot of very hard, honest questioning of the party, its ethos and how it behaves.
Meanwhile, the Green Party co-leader, James Shaw, says he expects potential coalition negotiations with Labour to begin later this week, and he's not ruling out a creative approach to a new partnership. The country's climate change minister for the past 3 years, he says one arrangement that could be considered is MPs appointed to ministerial roles outside government.
New Zealand is still, frankly, fairly young in our development of MMP. And again, there's no reason to think that it might not. There may or may not be innovations in it again this time around as well.
Meanwhile, New Zealand Prime Minister Jacinda Ardern says she expects to form a government in the next 2 to 3 weeks. An environmental advocate in Papua New Guinea says efforts are underway to convince Prime Minister James Marape to ensure a coal-fired power station does not receive the go-ahead. The Australian miner, Mayer Resources, is planning to mine coal in Gulf Province and use it to power the station to be built in Leh. The company's managing director, Paul Mulder, says they hope to get the green light to begin building by early next year. Peter Bossip of the Centre for Environmental Law and Community Rights in PNG said they are opposed to both schemes. He said they are challenging the company's claim that the power produced would be cheaper than alternatives and are hoping PNG Power rejects the deal. But Mr. Bossop told Don Wiseman the company would still be able to export the coal.
If they can mine and export coal, it may be okay in a sense that the coal will not be used in PNG. But if they are going to use coal in PNG, that's the site where we do not want that to happen. But also, if possible, we can try to hold the PNG government accountable under its treaty with the rest of the world on the climate change, Paris and Kyoto agreements.
There's going to be significant destruction at the Depot Creek site, isn't there, as a result of the mining and barging coal down, is it the Porari River?
Yes.
What sort of impact are they going to have socially and environmentally at Depot Creek with mining and then the transporting of it out of Gulf Province?
Environmentally, it will be mainly forest clearance, biodiversity destruction, as well as water pollution and soil erosion that will eventually end up in the river system, that will increase turbidity and, you know, sedimentation. While socially, local people will be displaced. The current concern is that the people are not properly informed. They have not been consulted and they don't know what is actually happening. So they will be disturbed in a way when they are not giving consent to the mining operation. So they will be moving out of the current villages and relocating themselves involuntarily. Psychologically, they will be affected. And at the same time, you know, cultural connection, they will lose cultural values.
In terms of PNG's commitments to do something about climate change, and I think the wider Pacific move to try and ensure that coal disappears, because this was something that was strongly debated at the last Pacific Islands Forum, wasn't it?
That's right.
What sort of support is there among the politicians in PNG for those sorts of ideas?
One government minister and one provincial governor, including the minister for mining, they are supportive of the coal mine, as well as the minister for the environment and conservation, who is also proposing to start a cement factory up in his electorate, where the cement factory will utilize coal as a form of, you know, energy generation. The minister responsible for environment, conservation and climate change is in support of coal, and then the minister for national planning is in support, and then the Galt provincial governor is in support, plus the mining minister. Prime Minister has not come out clear on this. We are organizing a petition that will be submitted to the Prime Minister, demanding Prime Minister to not allow coal mining to go ahead, as well as do not allow the setting up of coal power plant in Leigh.
I guess it's difficult in these tough times for politicians to say no to investment dollars coming in, isn't it?
That's right. That's right. It's really tough. But for politicians, they should put priority over humans' welfare, people's life, over money. And that's what we think our Prime Minister will think along that line. So we wanted to bring the issue to his attention by way of getting a number of Papua New Guineans, say at least more than 1,000 people, to sign petitions that will be forwarded to the Prime Minister.
Peter Bossop of the Centre for Environmental Law and Community Rights in PNG. The Cook Islands says a formal declaration of its sea borders protects them for future generations. The far-flung island nation includes 2 million square kilometres of ocean. Many years of work to establish its maritime boundaries was finally completed this month. The Director of Treaties and Oceans at the Ministry of Foreign Affairs, Joss Mitchell, says it's an important milestone for protecting Cook Island sovereignty.
It's significant because it's important to finalise the boundaries and have them declared and then lodged with the United Nations in New York so that they're internationally recognised boundaries. Important because of IUU fishing, illegal fishing incursions into our zone, but also more recently this risk of
potentially losing boundary lines or losing maritime jurisdiction because of sea level rise caused by climate change.
And that's a threat because of the way these boundaries are drawn up, isn't it?
It's a risk because when the United Nations Convention on the Law of the Sea was negotiated back in the early 80s, sea level rise and climate change was not even on the horizon. It had not been considered. So boundary lines were considered to be static, that is that they did not move. Once you've established them, they are there. I mean, this is the interpretation we continue to take, but nevertheless, we do, within our region, perceive this risk of potentially a loss of an island or a loss of coastline impacting on your maritime jurisdiction. So there's a lot of work being done right now on several different fronts, both in New York at the United Nations, but also here regionally, tasked to us by our leaders at the forum who have seen this as potentially an issue for the future, to begin the work, the legal work as well. But for us back at home, it begins with formally establishing our boundary lines.
And for the boundary lines, is it the low tide mark from which you start measuring the EZ and the terrestrial waters?
Yeah, so for an island, a tropical island, it is the lower part of the reef, the sort of outer part of the island, which is the fringing reef around most of our islands. And the reason it's taken so long is because the logistics of getting out to these islands, some of which are uninhabited, and throughout the Pacific, it's a mammoth task to get out and establish what they call the base points from which you derive your outer limits. So in the case of the Cook Islands, we established our base points, and from there we calculated our 12 nautical mile territorial sea, our 24 nautical mile contiguous zone, and the 200 mile outer limits. In addition to that, we have five boundary agreements with New Zealand, with Kiribati, with France in respect of French Polynesia, and with the United States in respect of American Samoa, and lastly Niue. So not only did we have to do all of the base points, but we also had to negotiate where these lines overlapped with another country. We had to negotiate a boundary agreement. So you can see, if you look across the Pacific, just how many intersecting lines there are and how many different boundary agreements had to be negotiated. So it's still a big challenge for many of the Pacific Island countries to finalise all of their boundary lines. And so for the Cook Islands, we're just glad to have this piece of work finally completed.
In all these exercises, you countries lose or gain territory. Has it been a net positive for the Cooks?
Yes, it has. We have, the fifth largest zone in the Pacific region. It's an area of just under 2 million, 1.86 million square kilometres. And for us, it's very, very important to formally establish it and be able to manage it more effectively because of that, especially with respect to illegal fishing.
How does it improve that in terms of making it easier to enforce that fishing regulations?
Well, in the past, the lines have been sort of unclear, you might say fuzzy. And if a fishing vessel is fishing along the margins of your boundary and you catch them, it becomes quite a task to negotiate a settlement with them or bring them to justice, because they will argue, well, you know, we didn't quite know where the line was. Now there is no such excuse. All the coordinates are passed to the Department of Oceans and Law of the Sea in New York and are publicly available. So there is no excuse for countries or companies or fishing vessel owners to not know where the boundaries are. So it's really for that reason.
The Cook Islands Director of Treaties and Oceans at the Ministry of Foreign Affairs, Josh Mitchell. And that's Dateline from RNZ Pacific. Tōwhā.